I've shared before the story of a man who was facing a troubling period in his life. He found no joy in his work, no connection in his community, no deep feeling with his family. His was an ordinary town with ordinary people doing ordinary things. The kids running around the center of town were noisy. The town square was grimy. The houses were cramped. The food was tasteless. Everyone just seemed glum and unhappy. So the man cries out to God, "Please, God, take me to paradise. I'm ready to go to the next life and leave this life behind." And God says, "Are you sure you're ready?" The man says, "There's nothing joyful for me here. I'm ready." And God says, "Okay, but once you get to paradise, there is no going home again." The man says, "That's fine." God says, "Then you're in luck. Paradise is only 2 days' walk from here." Well, the man's heart swells. He's so excited. He gets up the next morning, packs a few things, sets off for paradise. He walks for a day or so until it gets dark, and then it's time for sleeping. So he finds a tree by the side of the road. But before he falls asleep, he thinks, "You know, this is a part of the world that I've never been in before. What if I wake up and I'm confused about where I'm going? I definitely don't want to head back towards home. I want to make sure I go to paradise. So I'll take off my shoes and I'll put them on the side of the road with the toes pointing in the direction that I want to go towards paradise." And he does. He takes off his shoes, points them pointing forward, and he falls asleep. Well, we don't really know what happened. It may have been mischievous passerbys, some creatures from the forest playing around, or perhaps even an angel. But one way or another, the man's shoes get turned around and end up pointing back towards his hometown. The man wakes up in the morning. He puts his feet into his shoes with his toes pointing, he thinks, towards paradise, but really, we know, pointing towards home. And he sets off to continue his journey. He walks a full day, and as darkness descends, he sees a gleaming village. His heart leaps. It's paradise. He runs into the center of town, and it looks like the most beautiful thing he has ever seen. It's so clean. The people are smiling and laughing. Children are playing. He's so joyful with them. He thinks, "You know, I'm hungry. I wonder, how does a person find a meal in paradise? Maybe there's a street that looks like mine in paradise." And there he is. And on it is a house that looks like his house. And the door opens, and out comes a woman who looks an awful lot like his wife. She looks at him and says, "New, are you coming in for supper?" And he thinks, "How wonderful that this strange woman wants to feed me." He goes in, and she serves him a bowl of soup, and it's delicious. The house is warm and cozy. He tells the woman who looks like his wife how wonderful her soup is. She looks kind of strange at him and says, "I don't know about the soup, but it's time for sleeping." He goes upstairs to bed and sleeps. He comes down in the morning, and the woman hands him some tools. "Go to work," she says. And he heads off to work. And here the work helps him feel fulfilled, like he's contributing to the community. The man is full of a sense of purpose and vigor. He goes home at the end of every day to this house that looks like his house, to this woman who looks like his wife. And she again puts soup in front of him, and it's so delicious, and he goes to sleep again. Every day to him is a joy. Every day of paradise is like waking up anew, giving back to his community, celebrating with the people, being in this beautiful, clean town. He continues on in this way every day until his last. And there was not a single person who could ever convince him that it was not truly paradise. It's a good story, right? Teaches a good lesson. Sometimes that a change in perspective is all that you need. Sometimes what you are looking for is right in front of you the whole time. But friends, I have to tell you that this story lands a little differently for me this year. Because when we think about it, the man went back to the life he once had, now convinced it was his ideal situation. But despite his insistence that it was his future, it was still the same past that he was living in, just with a different attitude. That might have been enough for the man in the story, but I don't think it's enough for us today. We should not imagine that the past as it was is a suitable place for us to live in our future. Our approach to Judaism has never been about living in the past, and our reality in this pseudo post-pandemic world is that we cannot just go back to an over-idealized version of what we did before. Even our high holy day work of teshuva, of repentance, is not about returning to what was, but rather about turning to what should be. In all of these instances, we can look back at the past to shape our present, but we must move forward into the future. We know there is truly no going back, even in Storyland. Instead, we go ever forwards. This truth has long been evident in Judaism. In biblical times, coming together for worship meant that you would take your choicest produce, your first fruits, your unblemished calf or lamb, and bring it to the priest, who would offer it as a sacrifice to God on the altar. Anybody here bring me a bull or a ram? You know we don't allow animals in the sanctuary, right? Did anybody bring me the best of their summer crops? Fine grain, myrrh, or other aromatic spices, perhaps? No? Well, in truth, you wouldn't bring it here. In fact, everyone from everywhere would have to take everything to the great temple in Jerusalem. And you wouldn't be met by a rabbi. You'd be met by a priest, and maybe assisted by a Levite if the budget allowed for assistant clergy. Not exactly what we do here today. Well, after the destruction of the first and second temples in Jerusalem, Judaism needed to move forward. It's a little bit of a historical oversimplification, but in the rabbinic period that followed the biblical period, offering of animals and produce gave way to the offerings of our lips and our hearts through prayer. Priests, as religious functionaries, evolved into rabbis, as scholars and teachers. The idea of a single central sanctuary morphed into the multiplicity of synagogues, the houses of study, prayer, and assembly that are our spiritual homes today. And after the Babylonian exile and the Roman destruction of the temple, Judaism as a whole didn't try to go back to what was before. We looked to the past for inspiration and then moved forward. This actually is a wonderful description of what Reform Judaism is all about. Dr. Michael Myers, the professor emeritus of Jewish history at Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, teaches that the entire enterprise of Reform Judaism is a response to modernity. That's the name of his big book. You see, Germany in the late 1800s, in the late 18th and 19th century, was experiencing dramatic social changes. Elements in the Jewish community wanted to find ways to be both modern and Jewish at the same time. And so with a keen historical understanding of Jewish texts and tradition, they shaped reforms in liturgy, in ritual practice, in theology. And based on their understanding of the past, they introduced worshiping in the vernacular, not just in Hebrew. They introduced mixed seating and increased roles for women and liturgical changes in their prayer to better reflect the belief of contemporary Jews. Over the past century and a half in this country, we have similarly moved forward in Jewish practices and beliefs, inspired by our past, but not bound by it. Look where we are today. We celebrate this year 5 decades of seminary-ordained women as rabbis and a full century of women as bat mitzvah. We have expanded broadly the borders of the Jewish communal camp, seeking to include individuals and families of every conceivable shape and size, families with one or with two Jewish parents, Jews of color, LGBTQ+ Jews, Jews of different abilities, all others who in the past may have existed only on the margins of Jewish life. And during the pandemic, the time of enforced isolation and quarantine, we even made it possible for mourners to gather in a digital space to be comforted by their community with an online Shiva minyan. Ours is not an approach to Judaism bound exclusively to reliving our sacred past or replicating what once was just for the sake of our history. Our Judaism honors our tradition and our past customs, but there is no going back. We move ever forwards. I think our society is learning this lesson post-COVID as well. The pandemic, we know, upended everything in our world. The economy, our schools, work, travel, health, our relationships, everything. After 2.5 years, I think we are still wondering if things will ever go back to normal. Some aspects of our life have resumed in normal-ish ways, right? Restaurants are open, schools are teaching in person, Air travel is nearly back to pre-pandemic levels. Oh, and now you can be caught in rush hour traffic just as bad as it was before COVID hit. But no matter how much we might want things to go back completely to how they were in the before times, the truth is that they will not. They cannot. And we should not think that they can or should. We move ever forwards. A show of hands. How many of us spent at least some time in the past 2.5 years working or studying from home? How many of us are going to continue to do so, at least in part, even though companies may want us back in office buildings or on site? This already has had an impact on commercial real estate, on office supply stores, on shipping companies, on corner lunch spots and food trucks. How many of us in pandemic times ordered takeout with curbside pickup or used QR codes for menus? Restaurants today are finding ways of incorporating these changes into their new business models, even as in-person dining resumes. And who here chatted by video with relatives or friends across the country or around the world? I FaceTimed with Rwanda the other day. Doing that is no longer the province of science fiction or expensive conferencing equipment, but it's entirely commonplace. Distance no longer means absence from special moments. Grandma can zoom in from California to sing happy birthday, and elementary school plays are live streamed for all to see. Telehealth is now mainstream medical practice, and the importance of mental health services is finally being more widely recognized. There is no going back to what was before. Things are not going to be the same as they once were, if that was even ever possible. We move ever forwards. The Jewish world as a whole has learned this lesson, as have we here at TBS. There are things that we will just do differently now instead of how we think we always used to do them. We are among just about every congregation in the area in maintaining some of our youth education programming online, because we found during COVID that small group Hebrew sessions with students and teachers could be educationally effective and help ease the scheduling battles of today's families. Many of our adult education offerings too will have a digital offering for participation, and we can have speakers and teachers from anywhere. We've also adjusted our meeting practices. On a rainy night, on a snowy night, or just about on any night, attending a conference or committee meeting on Zoom sure beats driving all the way to Temple, right? We have seen that streaming on Zoom, streaming or Zooming, allows us as well to include in funerals or baby namings or b'nai mitzvah celebrations people who otherwise might not have been able to attend. We have also realized that although worshiping online can't replicate the exact feeling of being together in our sanctuary, for many of us, it can provide a sense of connection and spirituality in a different way. We are now up to 99 screens joining us online in addition to this full sanctuary. We know from our data that some of you who in the past never would have attended in person a Shabbat evening service tuned in regularly to our online offerings, even if you didn't have your camera on, even if you were eating dinner or washing dishes or doing who knows what during the service, even if it was just a matter of convenience. Our digital Mishkan enfranchises many of you to participate in worship in ways we had not ever seen before. And while my definite preference is to see you in person here in the sanctuary at least once in a while, we will not go back to that being our only option. We will continue to move forward in providing the widest possible opportunities for everyone to connect with our congregation. Friends, at this time of year, this message of looking back at the past but moving forward into the future resonates very clearly. This is the season of introspection and reflection. We review our actions over the past year. We think about the times that we missed the mark. We recall the words we spoke or the things that we did that we now regret. We engage in the practice of cheshbon ha-nefesh. Cheshbon means an accounting. But in contemporary Hebrew, the cheshbon is the bill that you get at the end of your meal in a restaurant. It's your check. Cheshbon HaNefesh, then, is the accounting of your life for this past year, your check.